Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, deadline day is done. We're past it. I can't lie. I thought when we recorded the other day, that was deadline day. And that's really bad from me considering I should know when deadline day is. Nevertheless, the window's shut. Sheffield United, we've got all that to come. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very good considering how it looked at the start of the window. Dare I say it was quite a busy end. We had a whole lot of like ingoings, outgoings, a lot of surprises along the way as well. I mean, aside from Morgan Rogers, Nedeljkovic, Gaucci, like Lino Sousa as well. Obviously, we didn't speak about, but so we can get a word in on him today. Ended up being quite a busy window, and then there's a lot of outgoings as well. There was a lot of rumors on deadline day, some outgoings that happened, some outgoings that didn't happen, some ones that maybe even went under the radar. So yeah, it's going to be a bit of a whistle stop tour in the end, mate, because we've got a whole lot to go through.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. There's plenty to discuss. And I think maybe we start with Lino Sousa, because this is a transfer that actually got announced by Plymouth Argyle before it did. But I mean, have we even announced the transfer? I don't think we have we?
All we did was wish him luck.
There
so it
go.
Was like, there was no like, welcome to Sfinity. It was like, oh, have a good time at Plymouth.
Like, welcome,
so
I guess.
We have signed him. Yes. Yeah. Welcome. We have signed him from Arsenal, or ex-Arsenal left back. He's gone to Plymouth on loan from the Villa. It looks like we've been a little bit clever with this. And it looks like the reason why there was no fanfare on social is because we bought him in as an academy signing.
Yeah.
Which... it seems, and you know, maybe there's someone in the comments that, you know, an accountant, someone that knows FFP a lot better than I do. It seems that that bypasses a lot of the rules and regs that govern profit and sustainability rules. So maybe quite a savvy move there from the Villa.
Absolutely. I think it falls under something like infrastructure and something like that, which basically means that you can sort of write all of it off. Again, I'm sure there's people in the comments that know and can provide a much better description of that, but I do find that quite interesting. Transfermarkt have it down as around €2 million, so not really a lot of money at all. And it's quite funny, mate, because with this signing specifically, if this signing doesn't sum up Aston Villa's youth system, mate, then I don't really know what does, because this is now got to be the fourth time, I think, in recent times we've sent a player out on loan to Plymouth Argyle. Two of those occasions, I believe, were the same player with Kane Kessler-Hayden. But Sousa has actually come from, you know, he was from Arsenal, that's where we signed him. But I'm sure you're aware, mate, Sousa was signed to Arsenal by West Brom, which is just crazy. So let's just, like, for you guys who like to visualise this, you know, you're visual learners, that's how you take things in. I'm just imagining this Venn diagram when we've got West Brom at the top. We've got a 16-year-old lad or girl, whatever. We've not necessarily seen it with the women's side, but maybe it's something we should consider. 16-year-old lad at West Brom. Villa signs him when his contract's about to expire or when they're performing well. And then they either... There's two ways it goes, mate. There's two ways. You either loan them to Plymouth Argyle or you loan them to Middlesbrough. This is the new formula, mate, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly right, mate. That's exactly right. Basically, our transfer strategy is we just go through the phone books of different guys at Bodymore. We're like, we just get Mark Harrison on the blower. We're like, right, mate, go on. Dive into the contacts. Who have you got for us this time? And out pops Lino Sousa. Nevertheless, I'm very excited to have him. He's a very exciting player. Looks like a championship loan is about par for him at the time. He's an England under-19 left back. He's made a lot of appearances mainly for Arsenal's under-23 in the last couple of seasons. So he's been on the bench for FA Cup games, Carabao Cup games, some Champions League games. Ian Foster, the Plymouth boss, has spoken very highly of him. Ashley Phillips, who's on loan at Plymouth, has played with Sousa in the England unders as well. So there's a nice bit of chemistry there. And so, yeah, I mean, it's nice that given that it seemed like Kane Kessler-Hayden was very excited to stay at Plymouth. Ian Foster said that he was maybe even a little bit upset to be leaving the South Coast to come back to Villa. It's nice that we've been able to hook them up and make their squad whole again later on in the window.
Yeah, I think they need it as well. Plymouth are in a really difficult place, and I mean they're going to need all the help they can get there. And we've taken one fullback off them from the one side and given one on the other. But I've sort of seen from a few Arsenal fans that have sort of, you know, maybe watched the unders a little bit closer than anyone else, actually seem quite good about this, mate. And I think there was, you know, dare I say it, not in the immediate future, but there was certainly a hope that within the next 2, maybe 3 years, that this is somebody who starts ahead of Zinchenko. I think when you look at Arsenal's fullback options over the years, they've not been brilliant on either side. You know, you've had Cedric fill in on both sides. You've had Tomiyasu fill in on both sides. Zinchenko, as of, you know, the past season and a half, really, that's where he's been playing when he's fit. But it's interesting. It's interesting. People thought that this guy generally had a future at Arsenal. So what we're going to do, guys, we're going to grade all of the transfers from the January window. So I'm going to go ahead, mate, and maybe this is hasty because I haven't seen him kick a ball yet. And, you know, obviously we've sent him out on loan to Plymouth, and that's going to be something that we're going to have to keep an eye on. But I like the deal, so I'm going to give this one a B.
Yeah, I was going to come in about the same. A C, a B. It's one that I think will definitely pay dividends in the future. The West Brom cohort of Villa is just huge. I have to shout out Matt Lynch, who put a list together. So obviously Morgan Rogers, two of the three players that Villa signed on deadline day were ex-West Brom Academy players. We've got Tim Irabunam now, Lino Souza, Chisholm Afoka, Rico Richards, Louis Barry, Luca Lynch, Tristan Rowe, and Jamal Jamot, all in the Villa setup previously of the Baggies. So it's nice to know, boys. It's like a, you know, they're getting the band back together, guys. This is a reunion just for the vibes. I'm here for it.
I'm here for it, mate. I'm here for it. Absolutely. And I think Nedeljkovic is an interesting signing, mate, as well. I know we've sort of spoken about that a few times. And I think, you know, even probably, you know, my frustrations from the last post-match game, you know, specifically with Matty Cash, I'll tell you, and you guys know as well that, you know, I think it's fairly standard that with the general consensus, we need a right back. So do I think Kostas Nedeljkovic is going to be the answer straight away? I don't think so, no. But the more I see and the more I read, it really intrigues me. And we've, you know, you actually pointed out, mate, when we did the initial transfer of rumour mill, I think it may have been, that he's actually played in the right of a three as well for Red Star Belgrade at times this season. So, you know, he's a young player. He's got experience at a relatively high level, playing for, you know, a massive club in Red Star, who, you know, on a semi-frequent basis make it to the group stages of the Champions League. You guys would have seen his sort of battles with Jack Grealish in the Champions League as well, if you paid attention. He's a young mind, and I think, like, that sort of flexibility, adaptability, he can play, as we said, on the right of a three, wing back, full back. It's exciting. And I think, like, again, like, this one's going to be hard to grade. I'd probably put it around a B and a C as well. It's going to be interesting to see not only how he develops specifically at Villa, but what this means for Matty Cash, what this means for Ezri Konsa, what this means for Kane Kesler-Hayden.
Yeah, he's the youngest of all of our transfer deals at just 18 years old. Lino Souza is 19, Morgan Rogers 21, and Joe Gauchy 23. So he's by far and away the youngest of that four. The only thing that's annoying about this transfer is we don't get to see him for 6 months.
Right.
And I dare say that there's definitely obviously I know we've got the aforementioned Kane Kesler-Hayden coming in and filling that gap, but there's a definite spot for him in that team, I think. I think we definitely need some cover at right back. And I'm not saying that I want to go ahead and throw an 18-year-old into that backup role like straight away, considering that he could end up playing quite a lot of football for him if there's any injuries or anything like that. But it's only really kind of the same situation as Kane Kesler-Hayden. And so that's the only bugbear with this. And I think I probably have to bump it down to a C on that alone, purely based on that's nothing to do with the deal whatsoever, just that we're not going to get to see him until July, August at the earliest.
Yeah, I think that's fair, mate. I think that's fair. And, you know, like, as weird as it sounds, like, it'll be like a new signing in the summer. Like, it literally is a new signing, but we're obviously going to see this, going to be integrated in pre-season. And you'd imagine as well, like, as soon as the season ends, he'll have his couple of weeks away, get his move over to the Midlands sorted, start, you know, bedding in the area, getting used to all that kind of stuff, meet his teammates, and hopefully he can cook, mate. Hopefully he can cook. And it's the same with Joe Gauchy, really, as well. I, like, again, can't claim to know a whole bunch about this guy. You guys would have sort of seen our announcement. I am excited about this. And there was a few comments. There was even a comment. I can't remember who said it, but shout out to the person in the comments on that announcement who said that Joe Gauchy was his cousin. So, like, if you've got any insight and information, like, let us know. But keepers are a weird one, aren't they, mate? Because, you know, as we kind of said on the announcement, this is an area where we don't really seem to sort of nail, like, and I don't know, like, I have no doubts that long term this deal could pay off, but I don't know, it's one of them, isn't it, mate? And, you know, kind of, I think today in the sort of early hours, it looks like South Korea advanced in the Asia Cup against Australia. Joe Gauchy was on the bench, didn't come on. They started with Matt Ryan in at the Socceroos. So I imagine he's sort of packing his bags and getting ready to move out now, mate. And hopefully, I mean, I can't imagine we necessarily see him this season, but maybe this is like a preseason thing. So again, like, this is another hard one to grade, isn't it?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, and I think it kind of depends on where he falls in the pecking order. So there's reports coming out of Australia that our plan is to make him Villa's backup goalkeeper. But we've seen a fair few goalkeepers used in the matchday squad by Villa this season, Sometimes just to make up the numbers. And it's interesting that if that is genuinely our plan, that we want to make him our backup goalkeeper, that we didn't look to get Robin Olsen off the books this January because, you know, Joe Gauchy's wages, you would imagine, will be nowhere near that of Robin Olsen, who has played for kind of very established clubs all across Europe. And so you imagine will command a much higher kind of weekly wage. What I really like about this deal, and where I'm potentially, maybe slightly hotter is the wrong word, but I really like that we've been proactive here. I think when you look at, obviously, I've never seen this kid play, and we've only seen the kind of same highlights as everybody, but very little is down to coincidence. And you look at the way that he excels in one-on-one situations. He's clearly got a nose for saving penalties. There's clearly a bit of arrogance is the right word, but he's a very confident goalkeeper. He seems to be a real character. Personality-wise, as well as in what his kind of standout traits are, he looks very similar to Emi. And I think that can only be a good thing. He's only 23, which is very, very young. And so I like the contingency planning. I like that we have to recognize that both Olsen and Martinez are now well into their 30s. And whilst you've definitely got plenty more to come from Emi Martinez, it's nice to know that he has a true understudy. I like that we've addressed that so early. And I think someone like Joe Gauchy is the perfect kind of profile of goalkeeper that we want one. The only thing that might mark this transfer down is that it didn't look like he was our main target.
Yeah.
We spoke earlier on in the window about, some different goalkeepers and stuff like that ended up going to Brentford. And so it doesn't look like he was our main target. But I'm not going to hold that against Joe Gauchy. You know, obviously when you're shopping in that kind of market for keepers, there's nip and tuck between the different profiles, you'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a C, really, isn't it, mate? I think that's fair to, you know, for all the reasons that you and I have both just listed. Morgan Rogers as well. Now, I'm really excited about this one. I'm really excited about this. Do not get me twisted, guys. I think Middlesbrough have got quite a good deal. I think they've probably got the better deal. I think there's still an element of risk with, you know, this signing. I was speaking to a Middlesbrough fan who I work with today, and he spent the past 2 weeks going, for the love of God, do not buy Morgan Rogers. But I think he's sort of come to his senses today and gone, well, actually, £15 million for a sort of attacking player who has only scored 2 championship goals this season is almost, you would be foolish to turn that down if you were Middlesbrough. And, yeah, you know, life will go on for them and they will find a replacement. And I think 15 million now, I mean, you kind of see them fees a little bit more frequently in the championship now, but for somebody with the upside that Rogers seems to have, you know, maybe we look back at this on a year, in a year's time and go, actually, I think we've probably pulled Middlesbrough's pants down a little bit. But until he's kind of pulled on that famous number 27 donned by Ahmed El Mohammadi, and we can see what he can do on the pitch at Villa Park, I think, again, I'm kind of leaning towards a C here. I'm really excited about this. Don't get it twisted. But I think when you pay that much for somebody who is as unproven, I think it's only fair to grade it at a C.
Yeah. I think, you know, I mentioned in the announcement, I think we've paid perhaps a little bit more than we initially bargained for. I mean, City bought him for, I think, 4 million, which, according to The Athletic, they've adjusted in the current market would be just over 5 when he was just out of school. That's a massive fee. And so,
registered his GCSEs.
Literally, like, fresh out the exam hall onto City's training ground, like, 5 million is a lot of money. And so you can see why our initial bid was turned down. I mean, we have to mark him down because he's a massive Baggies fan.
Yeah.
And realize this. Yeah. And so I can't give you an A purely on the fact that there's a really good piece on The Athletic. Jacob Tanswell and Steve Madley did a kind of deep dive into Morgan Rogers. Anyone who's got The Athletic, I'd really advise watching it. It talks about how he was watched by Pep and Mikel Arteta when he was just 16 in an FA Youth Cup semi-final between Man City and West Brom, and it was from that game that they went on signed him 4 months after he played at the City Academy ground for West Brom. He was then a Manchester City player for big money. A lot of City scouts were really impressed with him, and it kind of does a deep dive. But, you know, obviously it's fair to say that he's had a fair few loans, loans at Blackpool, loans at Bournemouth, there's a couple of other clubs, I believe. 2 championship goals this season. He is the top scorer in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, there has been more goal scoring season, more goal scoring game generally than there has been in the league season. But yeah, I think it's a pretty hefty fee. There's a pretty hefty fee. And I think one that it's not exactly what you'd call a snip. It definitely stands out from the rest of our other business. And I'm not going to use that against him, but he is the biggest name in this window. And I think particularly when we're starting to see Villa maybe stutter in front of goal. Maybe Moussa Diaby's not in the form that he once was. I know, obviously, Leon Bailey's going to be coming for that shirt. But you imagine that Morgan Rogers is going to play quite a few minutes towards the end of this season. He's definitely going to be, you imagine, on the bench this weekend, which will be exciting in its own. But there's definitely some more pressure to this side than there is with any of the others. So, yeah, I think I'm not going to get too ahead of myself and start calling this an A. I'd probably give it a B because I think he's a really good profile. You know, he's 6'4". He looks physically up to the test. So I like that side of it. But it's a big fee. And I think it's quite a big role in this squad, particularly now that Bergin Traoré has left, that he might end up filling.
Absolutely, mate. And that does lead us nicely on to the departures. And man, it's a sad day, man. Bertrand Traoré leaving the club,
yeah.
Terminated his deal. He's joined Villarreal on a 6-month contract, I believe. I'm really sad about this. Like, on a personal level, I really liked Bertie. I really liked him. And, you know, I'm sure you can go back on the channel and there's literally thousands of minutes of clips of me going, he doesn't track back, he doesn't do this. It'll always have a place in my heart, man. The guy does not score tap-ins. He only scores screamers. And I think he's somebody who was just very hard done by with in terms of injuries and then like managerial changes as well. And it kind of felt like the moment Dean Smith left the club, that was really the end of Bertrand Traoré at Aston Villa. And I mean, he's contributed since. Like, let's not get it twisted. I think, you know, that late goal at Leicester will sort of stay in everyone's minds from last season, which, you know, that felt like a really big goal at the time. So I'm absolutely devastated he's leaving, but I do think he'll suit La Liga quite well, mate. And I'm sure Unai Emery has sort of given him the sort of rundown on what to expect for life at Villarreal.
Yeah, he joins a side which definitely need his help. Villarreal are having a really bad season. They're 14th in La Liga and will have to put together some incredible run with 16 games to go to put themselves back in European contention. You imagine that there won't be any European football next season at Villarreal, which is quite a significant dent to their plans. But for Bertie, he just needed to get out of the club. He's a better player than that he's currently being allowed to demonstrate at Villa. But, you know, we both said that late goal at Leicester, and then he followed it up with the winning goal against Forest at home. And we both kind of said after that that if that's his swan song, then he can leave with his head held high. And whilst, you know, we've almost come 12 months since those moments, they are really, really underrated moments. And I think what's really nice about this, the kind of the club, is that you look at the kind of big achievements that we've had over recent seasons, getting promoted, staying in the Premier League, getting into Europe. There have been these unsung heroes, and it kind of felt, you know, you look at the run through promotion and then COVID lockdown and back post Trez. Yeah. And, you know, how when Trezeguet left, it was, you know, he could really do so as a bit of a kind of cult hero. And whilst I do think Bertie's quite on those heights, it's genuinely not far away. You know, he did some really important things for the club last season, considering that we recalled him from a loan as well, which I think is forgotten. You know, he was kind of yanked back from a loan at Turkey, thrust back into a squad which he probably never thought he'd get to play in again, and then contributed with some massive, massive moments. And I think agreeing to terminate his deal, he definitely won't be earning as much in Spain as he is in the Premier League. So he's taken a wage cut for the benefit of the club. You know, we've seen plenty of footballers in and around Europe say, no, I'm quite happy on the wages I am, thank you very much. I'll see out my contract and then move on. He's agreed to terminate his deal early, and I don't think you can, you know, necessarily take that for granted. So, yes, a tip of my cap to you, Bertrand Traoré.
Absolutely. I think we've got to give, in terms of grading, mate, I think we have to give this one a B. I think it's a good move for him, as you say, one off the wage bill as well. And, I mean, there's going to be a very big sort of Traoré-shaped hole in my heart. I hope he tears it up, man. I hope he tears it up.
I know you've
already reordered a Traoré. I know that's already on its way to your flat right now. And I don't blame you, because that's great. And yeah, I mean, in terms of like other outgoings, it was only, I mean, obviously we've got the sort of the loans that we spoke about earlier with Mijalkovic and Sousa, but then Doncic to Napoli, something that, again, we've both sort of spoken about being a really bizarre transfer. But, you know, I do really think that the league suits Dendonka's, you know, strengths really well. I think it's a lot slower. There is a bit of a physical element. And, you know, given the sort of variation of you either play, you know, a sort of a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2, I think he'll thrive in whatever position in sort of midfield or defence, won't he, mate?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good move. I think kind of similar to Bertie, and I'm happy that those boys have gone to find good clubs as well.
Yeah,
you know, both of them have gone to really, really big clubs across Europe. You know, we've not had to thrust them off to Turkey or somewhere like that, but both of them have gone to really established European sides. I know Bertie's got a bit of a job, but could well be with back on the European scene. I mean, you imagine that Dendonka will, in some capacity, definitely be playing European football next season. I think that's great. I think they've both gone to leagues that really suit their player styles. And so, yeah, I'm very happy that for both of them that they've gone on and they've not had to suffer a huge drop up in terms of the standard that they'll be playing out next season.
Yeah, I think I'd grade this one a C, purely on the basis that I think it does leave us a little bit light, but there's clearly more to play here, or more at play, sorry, in terms of wages and money and all of that, that the club are clearly coming at from a financial perspective. So I've liked my C's. I think I've almost graded everyone a C.
To be fair, I think I'll give Traoré an A. I think just because of the financial value of that deal, cutting it short, he was leaving on a free in the summer.
Right.
And so we've avoided basically paying 6 months worth of wages. And, you know, he's gone on to play for a good club. So I think that in terms of it's benefiting all parties, I think that's probably the best business that we've done this January, crazily enough. I mean, if I'm Leander Dendonka, that deal's an A-plus for me personally. You've traded Birmingham for the Bay of Naples. I mean, you've done really well.
He's leveled up in life. That's definitely correct. It's definitely correct. Guys, you'll have to let us know your ratings, your gradings in the comment section down below. But now, mate, we do have the matter of game to discuss. And it's one, as the days have gone by, I've grown more and more anxious about. And I don't like this, mate. I do not like this game at all. I don't like it. I can't get on board with this game. Not at this moment. And I think a lot of people will foolishly write off Sheffield United. And I can understand why. Sheffield United at times have, I say at times, all season, they've been probably as good as people expected them to be, right, in terms of where they're at in the league table and that. But the performances in the past few weeks have genuinely been better. But Sheffield United are going to Sheffield United. And, you know, they took the lead twice against Crystal Palace and they still couldn't hold on. Ultimately, the architects of their own downfall. And I just hate it whenever we come into games like this, mate, against sides like this, against guys like Chris Wilder. And did you see his little rant the other day about the official eating his sandwich? Like, and that being a lack of respect. I mean, I'm sorry, you've just disrupted my man on his lunch break just to complain. There's always someone else to blame when Chris Wilder's involved. And I'm sure that will be the case in this game as well, mate. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know if you looked at the comments on the last podcast, mate. Shout out to all the Newcastle fans. Gave us the views that we've been craving for months. But, you know, a load of the Newcastle fans are sort of in the comments being like, you got what you deserved. And, you know, I agree with that to a certain extent. And that, you know, we're a bang average team overperforming. And I just kind of thought, are we looking in a mirror here? Are you projecting? Is there some insecurities about your own team? All of these thoughts. But it did sort of get me thinking, because as you mentioned in the last game, mate, Newcastle away was the only game that Sheffield United have won all season leading up to the point in which we played them, obviously, and it was that 8-0 win. And I was in the stands for that game, and it was quite entertaining to watch. I do have to admit, as much as I hate Newcastle, but it's very Villa for us to go and lose this, isn't it? And it kind of feels like we're just in that realm, we're in that sphere where a loss could happen at any given time.
Do you want my positive or negative statistics first?
We'll go negative. Let's get it out of the way. I'm already feeling
it. Okay. So, yes, and then we'll end up the high. I'm already getting choked up just reading some of these things. Right. Here we go. Villa have not been playing very good football lately. That's the headline. We've picked up just 5 points from our last five Premier League games, winning one, drawing one, and losing two, shipping 9 goals in the process. In the previous five, before that stretch of five games, we collected 13 points from 5 games, so missing out on a possible 2, winning 4, drawing 1, and conceding only 4 times. So we are in a proper, proper sticky place at the moment. You'd have to go back all the way, and I know that we've not necessarily seen them too many times since then, but you have to go all the way back to January 2018 and a late Robert Snodgrass winner. The last time Villa picked up 3 points at Bramall Lane, Sheffield United have won all 3 of their home games against the Villa since then. So, you know, mate, your fears, they're not without substance. There's definitely the numbers there to back up your worries. However, I do have some that can hopefully perk up the mood just a little bit. We have only lost 2 of our 11 Premier League games against Sheffield United since the competition began. So generally, we've got a good record against the Blades. And we've won 6 of our 7 Premier League games against newly promoted sides under Unai Emery. The only caveat to that, the only newly promoted side that managed to stop Villa getting 3 points were Sheffield United back in December.
Do you know what? Am I feeling better after that? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, which do you want first? Because you've got to take the weapon for this move. There's 2 good, 2 bad. Sheffield United generally aren't a very good team. 10 points at this point in the season is almost in a historic Premier League low. you look back through Premier League history, Bolton in 95-96 had 10 points, Sunderland in 05-06 had 9, and then that infamous Derby County side in 07-08 had 7 points. So they are only the fourth team in Premier League history to be have 10 or fewer points at this point in the season. So they are, the statistically speaking, the fourth worst sides in Premier League history.
I mean, when you put it like that, mate, you can't expect anything other than a win. I'm just kind of looking at their results now, mate. They've shipped a lot of goals recently. There was 3 against Palace, 5 against Brighton. I was at that game. Same with the West Ham game. Was there for that. They conceded 2 there. So, you know, you're already looking at 9 goals in 3 games, which is just ridiculous. It is ridiculous. But, and again, like what worries me as well is there's genuine individual quality in this side. James McAtee has been a sort of shining light for them, I guess, on loan from Manchester City. I think it's his second season on loan there. They've signed Ben Brereton Diaz, who Bertrand Traore is seemingly replacing at Villarreal, who hadn't scored a single goal this season until he joined Sheffield United and scored on his debut. And, you know, he's still very raw. I'm still not convinced that he's necessarily Premier League quality. Very good in the Championship, but I think, I say the jury's still out. He's scored in both of his Premier League games so far, I think, and scored within a minute against Crystal Palace as well. But then again, like, even looking at guys like Gustavo Hammer, really like Gus, think he's a really industrious player. Trusty as well. Trusty locked up Ollie Watkins at Villa Park. Like, and I mean, not to say I didn't expect that, but it definitely caught me by surprise. They got a new goalkeeper as well. Finally, they've got rid of Fodderingham, probably one of the worst goalkeepers I think I've ever seen. They've signed a lad from Atletico Madrid, but I mean, there's still Ollie McBurnie in this side. There's still some absolute duds. So we should be beating these guys, shouldn't we, mate? We should be beating these guys.
There's no doubt about it. It is, we have to go there and get 3 points. I think we need it. And we both kind of spoke about after the Newcastle game that maybe a genuine defeat was what this club needed, because we had been getting by up to that point. Even though we hadn't been playing very well, the results had still been by and large there. We'd been going unbeaten through most of the games. I do think there's a kind of school of thought whereby we needed to reset, hard reset. And we've not had a lot of time. We've not had a lot, particularly as a lot of the focus will have been on the window and stuff like that. So just how much work is going to have been gone on the training ground is important. But we've got a nice, I think the main thing to protect now, if you're Villa, is I think fourth place has gone. I do. I think Spurs have more across their squad to push through and hold on to fourth at the end of the season. Although, you know, I don't want to be too down on Villa because we're only 2 points, a win off second, although City have got a game in hand. We have a nice 7-point buffer between West Ham in sixth, and we need to maintain that. You know, West Ham are capable of getting results at pretty much any ground in the league, and so they can make that ground up pretty quickly. And it's when you start dropping points to a Sheffield Wednesday and stuff like that, considering, you know, we've got not the easiest run of games yet. Obviously, we go straight off the back of this into the FA Cup replay against Chelsea. We've then got United, Fulham away, obviously Notts Forest then at home, who beat us away. Luton at Kenilworth Road. That smells.
Yeah.
Spurs, West Ham, and then Wolves, City. So it's a pretty difficult run now for a couple of months. European football will be back in there too. And so on paper, this probably represents one of the, I dare say, easier fixtures, but one of Villa's better chances of 3 points.
Yeah. And like, if we escape and it's a 1-0 win, like, that's a huge
good result.
I think that's what we want. That's what I'm going to predict as well. I'm going to say 1-0 win. I have to be optimistic. You guys know
like that.
That's half full. I'm going to take a 1-0 win all day long. They're fighting for their lives, man. They have been playing better football than I think people are giving them credit for in recent weeks, but they just can't see a game out. Mm. So it's like, even if we draw this game, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, I think we will sneak this as well, mate. I don't I'm going to go 2-1. I think we will get this done just about. I think Sheffield United will score, and I think it will be closer than we'd like as well. But yeah, I've got to back us.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Guys, we'd love to know your thoughts on, you know, the signings, the predictions in the comment section down below. I mean, I guess if you listen to this part, you'd have been listening on Spotify and Apple. So thank you very much. You guys can always tweet us. All the links to all of our socials and everything will be in the link tree that's in the description of this podcast. I guess we'll do a check on FPL after the game, mate. You know, now the sort of the game weeks are sort of resetting after the very long game week we had last week. So yeah, and you guys, if you guys aren't in the Villa Fila FPL League, get in there. We'll be giving away a shirt to the winner at the end of the season. So yeah, like, comment, subscribe, follow, download, share, and up the Villa.